Contains violence, adult language, nudity, and adult content.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It is 11 o'clock, Wednesday, October 16th, 2019, and thanks for joining us for the 77th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on blogtalkradio.com. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you for that, and if you would please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Okay, so that is a deep cut from the White Album, Beatles, of course, which was a song that was done by John Lennon, but you know everything has Lennon-McCartney on it because of their agreement early on. But it's essentially a John Lennon song, and it's called "I'm So Tired," and since it's since it's talking about, you know, I'm so tired, I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired, my mind is on the blink. I wonder should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, no, no. So I thought, given our topic, this would be the perfect song for this evening.
It is, and you actually guessed wrong. I didn't recognize it, but it sounded familiar, but I didn't know it. So, you know, now I'm going to have to go and look it up.
It's the song right before Blackbird.
Ah, okay. I'll go take a peek. I actually have that on vinyl upstairs. I'll have to go take a peek.
Whoa, watch out now. That's worth some money.
Yeah, I know. That was a gift from a friend a very long time ago.
Wow.
So as Dr. Mathis mentions, tonight's episode is entitled Behind the Wall of Sleep Deprivation, with apologies to the smithereens, which we will discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
Well, before I get into this, I wanted to do sort of a shout out to friends and family and fans of Ginger Baker, who passed last week, one of my all-time favorite drummers. And while he wasn't exactly the nicest of folks on the planet, and I'm being overly generous for a change, he was, without a doubt, one of the most superb jazz rock drummers ever. And so I was really saddened to hear about all that. So I wanted to put a shout out and condolences to folks in his immediate family and friends and circles. So tonight, what I want to talk about is another rock idol, and actually these folks are the godfathers of metal, of which, of course, I speak, is Black Sabbath. And the reason I'm going to be talking about Sabbath this evening is because most people associate Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne, and, well, they should, because he was their original singer. What most people don't realize is that they had, over their history, they've had a boatload of singers. And so I wanted to give sort of a chronological history of the various, what I call, eras of Black Sabbath and the singers that were associated with them, vocalists that were associated with them. So when they first came out with the first record, which was in 69, and roughly from 69 to 78, it was Ozzy Osbourne. So all their classic Sabbath stuff, Black Sabbath, the original, the self-titled record, Paranoid, Master of Reality, Volume 4, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, one of my favorites, Sabotage, Technical Ecstasy, and Never Say Die. So all of those are Ozzy Sabbath, and those are the recordings that most people know, from whence we get things like Iron Man and NIB and Fairies Wear Boots and Paranoid and, you know, all the Rat Salad and War Pigs, all the songs that everybody knows from Sabbath. Excuse me. And then when Ozzy was let go to drug stuff going on, most people know that Ronnie James Dio took over the helm, who was previously the vocalist for a band called Elf, and a relatively unknown band. And so he's recruited by, I think, by Tony Iommi of Sabbath. And he comes in, and he also had been the vocalist for Rainbow, Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. Rainbow, Blackmore actually got him from Elf, and Sabbath took him from Rainbow. So he then does, and so 1980, the restart of Sabbath from 80 to 82, two classic albums, Heaven and Hell, from which we get the song Heaven and Hell that the Dio era is most known for, and The Mob Rules, which is the follow-up recording. And then Dio has falling out, he goes away. In the meantime, Deep Purple is in hiatus, and so Tony Iommi recruits Ian Gillan, the lead vocalist of Deep Purple, and they put out one recording called Born Again. And there's a radio song off that called Trashed that people know if they know that era. And then, of course, Purple gets back together, and so Ian's with them for 83, 84. They do one tour together, and then he splits to get back with Deep Purple, and then Glenn Hughes comes in. And people know Glenn Hughes. Anybody who knows Glenn Hughes knows him from Trapeze, which is an original three-piece band that he played in. And he left there to go to Deep Purple when Ian Gillan left originally, and he replaced him. At any rate, Glenn Hughes comes in and does Seventh Star with Tony Iommi, and that's 85, 86. Then he goes away, and then they get a gentleman known as named Tony Martin, who comes in from 87 to 91 and does three albums with them, The Eternal Idol, Headless Cross, and Tire, all of which, by the way, are fabulous albums, and really, really like his voice. Tony Martin's got a really, he's a very underrated folk, and most people don't even know who he is and, you know, don't associate him with Sabbath, but he really is really good. And then Dio comes back and does one record with them called Dehumanizer and is with them from 92, 93. And he's gone again, and Tony Martin comes back and does two recordings with them, Cross Purposes and Forbidden. And that's 94 to 96. And then Sabbath kind of goes away for a while and, you know, does some live, they release some live stuff and all, but they're basically not very, not very active. And part of that is that, you know, Tony Iommi's doing solo recordings and all this kind of stuff. And then, of course, Ozzy comes back for a reunion with Sabbath and starts doing some touring and stuff. And then they put out, the reunion, the live album that they do that's a double CD, basically. And then the Devil You Know, and then comes out with their last album, which is 13, which was released a couple of years ago. And so Ozzy's comes back, and from 2013 to present, he's been with Sabbath. And, of course, now they're sort of done on hiatus. They're supposedly not going to play anymore, but we'll see. Tony's been struggling. My understanding is that Tony Iommi's been battling cancer for a while now, so I guess we'll find out. But that's kind of the Sabbath history. They've been around since 69 and have gone through, as you can see, quite a number of vocalists, but I can honestly say, and I say this with all due respect to Ozzy and everybody else who sung with Black Sabbath, I really enjoyed they all those eras of Sabbath sound different, but they all sound fabulous. And if you're a Sabbath person, I really encourage you to go out there and grab the other CDs. If you don't have them and you're not familiar with some of the Tony Martin stuff, it's really good, in my personal opinion. And not that the Ozzy stuff isn't good, because it's classic Sabbath. I mean, how could that be bad? So go back and revisit your stuff and, you know, enjoy it and rediscover something you haven't probably seen before. And for those Beatle freaks out there, which would include myself, obviously, Abbey Road just got released. The 50th anniversary special edition got released a couple of weeks ago. So Beatlemania folks, go out there and support that recording. That is, in my personal opinion, one of the three best recordings Beatles ever did. But that's just one man's view. And that's all I got to say.
Okay, so thank you for that part. And
sure.
I actually managed in that quick time to Google up a quick update on Tony's cancer news. So what that was is in 2012, he was diagnosed with lymphoma, and he got treated. He was finishing his treatment in 2014. They were announcing that they're going to do their final tour in 2014. And then he said he was in remission in 2016. There has been no contradictory news about it since then. He had an operation to remove a lump from his throat in December 2016. And in an interview about it, in 2017, he indicated that the lump that they removed was not cancerous. So as of August 2016, he remains in remission. So that
is
his status.
Okay, well, awesome.
Well, actually,
awesome.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give him extra applause just for that, because we know as good as anybody how nice it is to be able to beat that stuff and stay there.
Absolutely.
So, yes, that is the status of that. So thank you for that. Very interesting story. And now you guys know you're caught up with his cancer battle, and I'm glad that he's doing well with it.
Yeah, me too. That's awesome.
Yeah. All righty. So, again, we will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show and questions in the live chat room until around midnight. So feel free to give us a call. And the number is 914-338-0314. Okay, guys. Tonight's show is called Behind the Wall of Sleep Deprivation. And this show was postponed from October 2nd due to some technical difficulties, which we have now mostly resolved. at least able to do a show. The hosting company that we have our board on is having some technical issues during an upgrade. So we are able to at least bring you tonight's show. All right. It is safe to say that just about everyone has at one time or another had occasional bouts of sleeplessness, even insomnia and other common sleep disruptions, but most people do not struggle with these for more than a few nights, and even fewer people in the long term. Numerous studies of the psychological effects of sleep deprivation have discovered a couple of interesting points. First, sleep deprivation can be either or both a cause and a symptom of numerous mental illness conditions. The second, the sources of the physiological and psychological effects of sleep deprivation are linked to the pineal gland, and the disruption of its production of either or both serotonin and dopamine, both of which are necessary to produce the hormone melatonin, which is needed for restful sleep. Restful, healing sleep is critical to our sense of alertness, physical and mental healing, memory retention, learning, focus, healthy executive function, emotional regulation, and sense of well-being, and other things as well. Many people are dismissive of its necessity because the damage a deficit causes can take a while to become obvious or debilitating, and we are an instant gratification and information culture. Tonight we will discuss, first, sleep deprivation from a physiological perspective, but we're going to focus on how those aspects tie into your mental health. Second, sleep deprivation effects in the short and long term from a mental health perspective. Third, related pathologies and symptoms. And fourth, resources and suggestions for sufferers. And before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you'd like to add before we begin.
Yeah, I just as a side note, the pineal gland is also involved, theoretically supposed to be involved in extrasensory perception and various paranormal, quote-unquote, psychic abilities as well.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. All right, so section one, we're going to talk about sleep deprivation from a physiological perspective and focus on how those aspects tie into mental health. So the first article that I want to read to you guys is Dysregulation of the Dopamine System in the Pathophysiology of Schizophrenia and Depression by Anthony A. Grace, Ph.D. This is from the NIH.gov website. It was published in 2016 in the journal Nature Reviews Neuroscience in the U.K. It was written in the U.K., but it was published by NIH. I'm not quite sure how that worked out. All right, so this is, it's a small clip, but from the abstract, he had written some stuff. I wasn't able to get my hands on the whole paper, but he had said, emerging evidence suggests that disruptions within these regulatory systems may underlie the pathophysiology of several psychiatric disorders, including schizophrenia and depression. Which is very interesting, because then this is going to suggest that sleep deprivation is a cause, possibly, rather than a symptom. The full paper got into it in more detail, but I wasn't able to get access to that. The second thing I want to read to you guys is, what's the difference between dopamine and serotonin? This was medically reviewed by Deborah Rose Wilson, PhD, MSN, RN, IBCLC, AHM, BCCHT. Is she a friend of yours? She likes her acronyms. On December 5th, 2018, this was written by Carly Vandergriet for Healthline.com. And the notes are here. Understanding neurotransmitters. Dopamine and serotonin are both neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are chemical messengers that regulate countless functions and processes in your body, from sleep to metabolism. While dopamine and serotonin affect many of the same things, they do so in slightly different ways. The main difference. Dopamine system dysfunction is linked to certain symptoms of depression, such as low motivation. Serotonin is involved in how you process your emotions, which can affect your overall mood. Your sleep-wake cycle is regulated by a small gland in the brain called... And now, how did you pronounce it, Dr. Matthews? You said it differently than I did.
It's a pineal.
Pineal gland.
Pineal.
Okay. All right. The pineal gland receives and interprets light and darkness signals from the eyes. Chemical messengers translate these signals into the production of melatonin, a hormone that makes you feel sleepy. The pineal gland has receptors for both dopamine and serotonin. A 2012 study also found that sleep deprivation decreases the availability of certain types of dopamine receptors. With fewer receptors, dopamine doesn't have anywhere to attach to, making it hard to stay awake. Serotonin is also involved in preventing rapid eye movement sleep. Studies have shown that increasing serotonin through the use of SSRIs reduces REM sleep. And I'm going to check in with you at this point and see if there's anything that you care to add to this.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I'm not in favor of a lot of medications, including the SSRIs, for long-term usage. The other thing, the easiest thing I tell people when they're trying to understand the difference is serotonin is a calmer and dopamine is a jacker-upperer. So dopamine is an excitatory type of neurotransmitter and serotonin is more of a calming neurotransmitter. That's the other big difference.
Yes. And I know later on in my notes we are going to go back and discuss REM sleep again and its role. And you know, when you don't get it, certain things that are critical for mental health issues.
Oh, yeah.
You will get to that, I believe, in Chapter 3.
Okay.
All right. So moving along to Part 2, we're going to talk about sleep deprivation effects in the short and long term. So this particular post is sleep and mental health. Sleep deprivation can affect your mental health. This was published originally in July 2009, but is updated in March of 2019. This is from the Harvard Mental Health Letter at Harvard Medical School. And they say, quote, "Americans are notoriously sleep deprived, but those with psychiatric conditions are even more likely to be yawning or groggy during the day. Chronic sleep problems affect 50 to 80% of patients in a typical psychiatric practice, compared with about 10 to 18 of adults in the general U.S. population. Sleep problems are particularly common in patients with anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, and ADHD. Traditionally, clinicians treating patients with psychiatric disorders have viewed insomnia and other sleep disorders as symptoms. But studies in both adults and children suggest that sleep problems may raise risk for and even directly contribute to the development of some psychiatric disorders. This research has clinical application because treating a sleep disorder may also help alleviate some symptoms of a co-occurring mental health problem. The brain basis of a mutual relationship between sleep and mental health is not yet completely understood, but neuroimaging and neurochemistry studies suggest that a good night's sleep helps foster both mental and emotional resilience, while chronic sleep deprivation sets the stage for negative thinking and emotional vulnerability. How sleep affects mental health, still from this paper. Every 90 minutes, a normal sleeper cycles between two major categories of sleep, although the length of time spent in one or the other changes as sleep progresses. During, quote, quiet sleep, a person progresses through four stages of increasingly deep sleep. Body temperature drops, muscles relax, and heart rate and breathing slow. The deepest stages of quiet sleep produce physiological changes that help boost immune system functioning. The other sleep category, REM, rapid eye movement sleep, is the period when people dream. Body temperature, blood pressure, heart rate, and breathing all increase to levels measured when people are awake. Studies report that REM sleep enhances learning and memory and contributes to emotional health in complex ways. Although scientists are still trying to tease apart all the mechanisms, they've discovered that sleep disruption, which affects levels of neurotransmitters and stress hormones, among other things, wreaks havoc in the brain, impairing thinking and emotional regulation. In this way, insomnia may amplify the effects of psychiatric disorders and vice versa. Next section, still from the same paper. Psychological effects of sleep deprivation. More than 70 types of sleep disorders exist. By the way, I will quote a different paper later that claims there are now 96. The most common problems are insomnia, difficulty falling or staying asleep, obstructive sleep apnea, which is disordered breathing that causes multiple awakenings, various movement syndromes, unpleasant sensations that prompt night fidgeting, and narcolepsy, which is extreme sleepiness or falling asleep suddenly during the day. Type of sleep disorder, prevalence, and impact vary by psychiatric diagnosis, but the overlap between sleep disorders and various psychiatric problems is so great that researchers have long suspected both types of problems may have common biological roots. All right, that is the end of the notes from the Harvard paper. The next one I want to quote to you is sleep deprivation, an article posted by Columbia University Department of Neurology from 2015, Columbia University Vagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons at Columbia University Medical Center, New York. And they say, sleep deprivation is not a specific disease. It is usually the result of other illnesses and life circumstances that can cause its own symptoms and poor health outcomes. Types of sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation can occur for a number of reasons. These are four of them, the biggest ones. Sleep disorder. These include stuff like insomnia, sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and restless leg syndrome, and there are more. Aging. People older than 65 have trouble sleeping because of aging, medication they're taking, or medical problems they're experiencing. Illness. Sleep deprivation is common with depression, schizophrenia, chronic pain syndrome, cancer, heart disease, stroke, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's. Other factors. Many people experience occasional sleep deprivation for other reasons, including stress, a change in schedule, or a new baby disrupting their sleep schedule, for example. Symptoms. At first, sleep deprivation may cause minor symptoms, but over time, these symptoms can become more serious. Initial sleep deprivation symptoms may include things like drowsiness, inability to concentrate, impaired memory, reduced physical strength, and diminished ability to fight off infections. And these are the early ones. Sleep deprivation complications over time may include increased risk for depression and mental illness, increased risk for stroke, heart disease, and asthma attacks, increased risk for potentially life-threatening complications such as car accidents, and untreated sleep disorders like insomnia, sleep apnea, and narcolepsy, hallucinations, severe mood swings. Diagnosis. Sleep specialists say that one of the telltale signs of sleep deprivation is feeling drowsy during the day. In fact, even if a task is boring, you should stay alert during it if you are not sleep deprived. Also, if you frequently fall asleep within 5 minutes of lying down, then you likely have severe sleep deprivation. People with sleep deprivation also experience what they call microsleeps, which are brief periods of sleep during waking time. In many cases, sleep-deprived people may not even be aware that they are experiencing these microsleeps. If you have any of these warning signs or the symptoms listed above, see your doctor or ask for a referral to a sleep specialist. Your doctor will ask you detailed questions to get a better sense of the nature of your sleeping problems. In some instances, if a more serious and possibly life-threatening sleep disorder, such as sleep apnea, is suspected, then the sleep specialist may conduct a test called a polysomnography or a sleep study. This test actually monitors your breathing, heart rate, and other vital signs during an entire night of sleep. It gives the sleep specialist a lot of useful information to help diagnose and treat your underlying disorder. And I have a personal comment to make here because I do have a sleep disorder and I've done a couple sleep studies. I wanted to say to our listeners, unless you already strongly suspect that your primary sleep problem is most definitely only sleep apnea, do not allow the doctors to stop testing you at just a home sleep study apnea test. This is nonsense brought in by insurance companies who don't want to actually pay for proper diagnostics. This is much more common now than it used to be. Insist on a lab study overnight, apnea factors or not, and find a referring doctor who will back you on this. Home studies only test for apnea. They have nothing about other disorders, nothing about stress, your sleep environment, other medical factors, vital signs changes, and so on. It's literally a thing on your finger and a little gadget to measure your heart rate. There's no way it can test anything else. And their failure to pursue this in a timely manner can delay appropriate treatment by crucial months. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Mathis and see if there's any comments you'd like to make before we continue.
Other than I think we ought to, like, blow up most insurance companies. Oops, did I say that?
That was that long. He's not really going to do it. We don't have bail money.
Yeah.
I'm aggravated with them. My own sleep disorder still remains unfinished because of such shenanigans, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I hear you. That's, you know, that's the same experience that people with, you know, psychiatric issues have as they come in. And most insurance companies want you to diagnose on intake, and they don't want you to do an extended intake, and they sure as heck don't want you to do any psychological testing to differentiate between psych disorders that present with very similar symptoms, like agitated depression versus anxiety versus early stages of bipolar disorder versus ADHD versus amphetamine, you know, whatever, versus extra agitation because you have a sleep disorder. You know, one of the things you'll see with certain people who experience sleep deprivation, and unfortunately I'm one of them, is incredible irritability. When I get sleep deprived, I jokingly refer to my condition as psychotically angry. unfortunately, it's not really that funny what is happening. I just got to have to, you know, wrap myself in saran wrap and sanitize myself for human consumption with other people. It's really bad. And I can't remember if I shared this with you or not, but the last 4 weeks I've been dealing with shingles. And my mom had them multiple times throughout her life. And if you have chicken pox, you have a greater proclivity for developing shingles later in life. So actually, I thought I was going to get away with it with nothing. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hi, here we are. And the worst thing for the shingles, I mean, it's very, very painful. And they give most patients opioids to deal with the pain. And I just chose to tough it out and use my brain because I got to do that as a kid. And I'm pretty good at doing that. The thing that got me was that you can't do that when you're sleeping. So I'd lie down and go to bed. I'd go to sleep. I'd roll over. I'd roll over on the shingles, whether on my back or on my chest. And it's like, hi, remember us? We're back. And for the first 3 weeks, I maybe got 2 hours of sleep a night. And it was really, 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 really bad. You know, and trying to run a full-time practice and do that and, you know, function like a semi-normal person, it was really rough. And, you know, I did a bunch of things to boost my immune system and a bunch of things to keep my brain going, to increase the dopaminergic levels in my brain, holistic stuff, not, you know, crazy stuff. And really, if it hadn't been for that, I don't know that I could have functioned for the first 2 weeks with this thing. You know, and I have a sleep disorder like yourself. I have a sleep disorder, a different one. But I have the circadian rhythm thing whereby I go to bed about 5 or 6 in the morning and get up about 1:30. Now, once I go to bed, I sleep pretty regularly until I got these things. And fortunately, they're on the downturn, and my sleep is getting much, much better. But, man, for 2.5 or so weeks, it was bad, bad. And it was all the heck I could do to stay focused. And I probably did more coffee with caffeine in these 2.5 weeks than I've done in the last year in my life, like total. I had to do something to, you know, keep myself focused on that and the bee pollen and, you know, all this other stuff I was doing to boost my immune system and limit the viral stuff. And it was like crazy, crazy. So, you know, people underestimate the impact of not getting sleep and not getting proper REM sleep. And I've seen a lot of studies that talk about millennials getting a whole lot less of this than previous generations. And I just saw a report from APA that there's a really, I don't want to call it an epidemic, but there's a super increased rate of mental problems, mental disorders with millennials, particularly anxiety and depression, both of which, depression in particular, but, you know, anxiety too. Sleep deprivation is not great for those things. There are certain forms of depression where you limit sleep because people with depression tend to oversleep, and that's not good either. But that's very different than being sleep deprived. And so it's a lot of this anxiety and worry and depression stuff that millennials seem to be more susceptible to than previous generations. And they're experiencing a whole lot more mental issues than previous generations. And part of that had to do with sleep stuff because they're not getting as much sleep because they're, you know, drinking all these crazy drinks and texting all the time and jacking their brain up. And then they can't go to bed and then they have to get early to work. And so it's a real problem.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I just saw that today. Yeah.
Yeah. Not surprised. Okay. So this one is going to be pretty crunchy. This is related pathologies and symptoms. So in this section, we wanted to cover a large number of common sleep disorders and related conditions and pathologies that cause sleep disruptions as a common symptom. We urge our listeners to report anything we discuss tonight that sounds familiar in their own situations to their personal physicians as soon as possible. Sleep deprivation,
absolutely,
regardless of the cause or reason, over a short time may seem like no big deal, but it can soon enough cause a wide variety of kinds of physiological and psychological damage, many of which are hard to reverse and a few of which may even be incurable past a certain point if left ignored. Okay, so types of sleep disorders, and this is from a page from a business called ACCQ Sleep Labs, and this is the thing I referred to earlier. According to their page, there are over 96 different diagnosable sleep disorders. Here is a look at some of the most common, and they have a list here. And so this is kind of important because when you go to the sleep lab, primarily in the sleep lab, all they can diagnose is either brainwave stuff or apnea, whether you're breathing.
Mm-hmm.
The rest,
yep,
is a lot harder to diagnose. So it's important for you guys to understand that sleep disorders are quite varied and not to just take the, you know, 1.5 answer approach to this. First one on the list, the old favorite that both Dr. Mathis and I have in different presentations. His is the time of day he can go to sleep. Mine is that my sleep rhythm is completely screwed up. It doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I don't have rhythms like normal humans. Circadian rhythm disorder, a delightful joy. Your circadian rhythm is a biological process that is driven by internal mechanisms and external stimulus, mostly driven by sunlight, for example, wake-sleep cycle. Circadian rhythm disorder encompasses a variety of different events, such as sleep phase delay or sleep phase advancement. I don't have a note here, but I'm going to pause if you would like to add anything else, since I know this is a topic near and dear to your heart.
Unfortunately, that's true. Personal
it
experience.
Is true. You know, I may have not included some things in here that you might happen to know, because I know you've done a ton of research on this for personal reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And it turns out when I went to get it confirmed, because if you have any of these things on a more of a permanent basis, and of course, if you can trace it back to childhood, yada, yada, you can actually, if they impact your occupational or academic stuff enough, you actually can get certified under Public Law 94-142, the Americans with Disabilities Act, because it is registered and recognized as a disability that is that folks have to accommodate to some level, particularly governmental organizations. And there are about six or seven different patterns within the circadian rhythm disorder, and they all have separate titles and separate codes, and I'm not going to confuse listeners by getting geeky and stuff in this, but just to say that there isn't one form, because you and I have two different forms of it, for example.
Exactly, right.
And when I went to my sleep, and I went to a sleep specialist to make sure I was going to get, you know, the official whatevers, and he's like, oh yeah, well you got it right, but let me show you some other stuff. And he opens his thing up and there's like, I don't know, 30 different things under this. Okay, and I'm just thinking, holy manoli, because the DSM only recognizes like five or six of them. And evidently the medical profession has these little subcategories of these five or six. And he's showing me this list and I'm thinking, holy manoli. So there's a lot of different variations. So I encourage our listeners, if you think you have this, you know, go see somebody who knows their cookies. Don't just go to a garden. Don't go to your family physician or even internal medicine person or pediatrician if you're a child adolescent. You get a referral to a real sleep person who knows what the heck they're doing, who's board certified in sleep specialty, because they can really do – they do their job really, really well. And, you know, you could have some weird variety you don't know about, and they may have some weird treatment. For some of these are treatable and some of these are not.
Definitely. Although I would say – if you have to choose a hill to die on, if your family physician is more supportive of this, because I have run into at least two sleep doctors in my area who don't take this crap seriously, opt for the doctor who takes you seriously and then branch out.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And that's true of anything. True of anything. A lot of folks, well, I mean, even people – and I just had this week with a very sad case that I'm dealing with right now. You know, people will go in, and folks who other mental health professionals will minimize or even, you know, obfuscate certain disorders that a person has, and they like, oh well, yeah, you got it, but it's not that big of a deal. Just do this, and you'll be fine. And you know, and my jaw's on the floor when I hear people say stupid crap like that, because it's like, hello, really? That's like Nancy Reagan's just say no. Oh, my Lord. You know, and so if you don't get the answer.
Professional gaslighting going on.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, make sure that you know who you're dealing with. And if you get somebody and you feel like they're not taking you seriously or you feel like they're blowing you off or whatever, get a second opinion, get a third opinion. You know, check their credentials out. Call the national associations or the local, you know, your local association for, you know, sleep disorder people or physicians or psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, whatever, and see what kind of, you know, see who's in your area and see what kind of qualifications they got and go to the most qualified person you can, because this is not something you want to muck around with. Over time, sleep deprivation can shorten your life by years. So you definitely don't want to mess with it. And it certainly impacts the quality of your life. And you don't want to mess with that either.
And we are definitely just about to talk about more of that as well. Like, I don't want to terrify you guys, but you do need to understand that just staying up until 3 a.m. a couple of times is not what we're talking about here. And
you need
to understand.
I wish.
Like, these are physical pathologies, but they can be caused by mental health and they can cause mental health problems. You know, it's both.
Right. Exactly. Yes, exactly. And some of them are inherited. So if you see these patterns running in your family, you may have an inherited sleep disorder. And if you do, it becomes a whole lot harder to manage. It's not impossible to manage, but it's a lot harder to manage. But that's why you want to go to a specialist, give them a good history. You know, don't muck around with this stuff.
And okay, so second one, insomnia, which most of us have heard of. Insomnia refers to a person's inability to initiate sleep, waking up frequently during the night, or waking up too early in the morning. Narcolepsy. Several people have heard of this one, too. This is a rare but chronic sleep disorder which presents most commonly as overwhelming daytime sleepiness despite adequate nighttime sleep. Sudden desire to sleep, commonly referred to as sleep attacks, occur with or without warning and may be irresistible. They can occur occasionally or many times in a day and often occur at inappropriate times and places, like in the middle of a work meeting or once in a while you're driving and stuff like that. There are narcoleptics who have their driver's licenses taken. You know, not everyone, but it can be that serious. So you need to keep an eye on that. Okay, next one. Obstructive sleep apnea, OSA, or just sometimes sleep apnea, but the more serious one is obstructive. Obstructive sleep apnea results from a blockage in the airway in the back of your throat, causing a pause or a cessation of airflow. These events are caused by the collapse of the soft tissue at the rear of the throat, obstructive events, or failure of the brain to send a signal to the muscles to breathe, central events. And I'll talk about that in a bit. Periodic limb movement disorder, PLMD. A sleep disorder which involves repetitive movements of the limbs during sleep and may be associated with arousal activity in the brain during sleep. This is not the same as RLS. I'm going to get to that in a hot second. REM sleep behavior disorder. You remember earlier I was telling you guys, you know, REM sleep is super important. REM sleep behavior disorder is associated with increased muscle tone during REM sleep. This results in the ability for the individual to act out their dreams or engage in movements or abnormal activity during sleep. Restless leg syndrome, RLS. A lot of people have heard of this one. Restless leg syndrome is a neurological disorder that presents as an uncontrollable sensation in the arms or legs. The sensation is often described by patients as creeping, crawling, itching, or tingling sensations, which is sometimes relieved by moving or stretching. It is not unlike what you hear some people describe the first vestiges of neuropathy, by the way. So keep an eye on that, especially if you don't actually have neuropathy. You may have RLS. Upper airway resistance syndrome, UARS. UARS commonly presents as chronic daytime sleepiness, snoring, and brief but frequent arousals during sleep. It is similar to OSA that I mentioned earlier, but there are often recurring breathing events during sleep caused by the narrowing of the airway, which results in an increased effort to breathe during sleep. And I have a second list here. This is from an article on sleep disorders from WebMD. And they mention additional disorders that were not in the previous list. First is central sleep apnea, which they mentioned briefly above, but this one has a bigger mention. In central sleep apnea, related to obstructive, breathing is disrupted regularly during sleep because of the way the brain functions, not the back of your throat. It's not that you cannot breathe, which is true in obstructive sleep apnea. Rather, you do not try to breathe at all. The brain does not tell your muscles to breathe. This type of sleep apnea is usually associated with serious illness, especially an illness in which the lower brain stem, which controls breathing, is affected. So if you have this kind of apnea, I'm not necessarily sure a CPAP will help you. And this is why we want to bring it up, because everybody goes, oh, if you have a breathing problem, you have apnea, and you put the CPAP over your face like a little alien face hugger, and life is good. That's not a cure-all. This is so you guys can understand why not. Next one, hypersomnia or hypersomnolence. Hypersomnia, which refers to either excessive daytime sleepiness or excessive time spent sleeping, is a condition in which a person has trouble staying awake during the day. People who have hypersomnia can fall asleep at any time, for instance, at work or while they are driving. My notes, hypersomnia is a symptom rather than a condition of its own, and sometimes is a symptom of non-sleep disorder medical problems. Back to them. There are several potential causes of hypersomnia, including but not limited to narcolepsy, daytime sleepiness, sleep apnea, interruptions of breathing during sleep, not getting enough sleep at night, plain old sleep deprivation, being overweight, drug or alcohol abuse, a head injury, a neurological disease such as multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease, prescription drugs such as tranquilizers or antihistamines, genetics, as Dr. Mathis mentioned earlier, having a relative with hypersomnia, depression, and more. Next one is non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder, often called non-24 or N24. N24 is a special kind of circadian rhythm disorder that is particularly common among blind people. People with N24 may find themselves gradually going to bed later each night and waking later each day until their sleep schedule gets flipped all the way around. Non-24 is a circadian rhythm disorder and occurs because our internal clock is not synced with light and dark cycles of the day and night. Most individuals with this disorder are totally blind. That's because your internal clock gets its cue from seeing light, but sometimes people who have normal vision also get it. There's no cure, but treatments including hormones, medicine, and light therapy can help you get closer to a normal sleeping pattern. That is one of the most difficult to treat successfully. Parasomnias. Parasomnias are disruptive sleep disorders that can occur during arousals from REM sleep or partial arousals from non-REM sleep. Parasomnias include nightmares, night terrors, sleepwalking, confusional arousals, and many others. Shift work sleep disorder. Shift work sleep disorder is trouble sleeping because you work nights or rotating shifts. You may also have this problem if you have trouble staying awake or alert when you are supposed to work your shift. Completely different article. Quote, the REM stage of sleep provides us with the emotional and cognitive benefits of sleep. With sufficient REM sleep, we feel emotionally balanced and able to regulate our emotions and make good judgments. Our brain works and processes information as it should. Without it, we're moodier, prone to irrationality and poor decision-making, and have difficulty remembering things. It's easy to see how this mindset makes it tough to cope with mental health. Together, mental illness and insomnia exacerbate the effects of each other, creating a classic negative feedback loop, and once they get started, push the patient into a downward spiral. This makes treatment of both conditions difficult. The source for this is Tuck.com commercial website. This is from Harvard Health on their website, March of 2019. Sleep problems are particularly common in patients with anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, and ADHD. Traditionally, clinicians treating patients with psychiatric disorders have viewed insomnia and other sleep disorders as symptoms. And this last part is from me. So it is both true that poor sleep can lead to or exacerbate mental illness issues, and certain pathologies can disturb sleep and thereby make the patient's symptoms worsen. At this point, I'm going to pause here and check in with Dr. Mathis and see what you would like to add.
I'm good. Why don't we move on to suggestions on how to deal with this if you have it?
I do. Okay, so last part, resources and suggestions for sufferers. So there are multiple conditions that can disturb your sleep. And as such, there will equally be a variety of ways you need to address the problem. In this section, we want to talk about some of the resources and suggestions for people who are getting poor sleep and which solutions are likely to be more useful for which pathologies. We are not offering diagnoses or treatment plans for individual listeners, but suggestions and ideas you might take to your medical professionals and ask about. You will need to sit and figure out a treatment plan with your doctor based on your own diagnosis, but here are several ideas for changes that can be made, from simple lifestyle and environmental changes that one can do around the house for free, to drugstore items, to medical devices and prescriptions, and more therapies. So some of the first few kinds of suggestions are not about psychology directly, but they are important to solving sleep disturbances, and good, healthy sleep is critical to mental wellness. The very first suggestion is for everyone, regardless of at what level you want to deal with this. Logs and tracking. A condition such as this may take a while to determine all of the relevant factors in disturbing your sleep. Most, if not all, sufferers from sleep disturbance problems would benefit from keeping a sleep log at the bedside. Tracking factors that could be relevant, from environmental comfort to light to noise level to rumination and mental anxiety, medications and supplements taken near bedtime, even pulse or BP if you have reason to suspect your vital signs are out of the ordinary in some way. Now, there's lots and lots of sleep disturbances, but it would be helpful in narrowing it down if you can track some of these things as soon as you suspect you have a problem. So, first group of suggestions are changes in the home. And most of these are things that you can do for free. You don't even have to have insurance or very much money to do any of these things. First are things about the person, your own body, yourself. Consider any needed changes in what you wear to bed, how you do your hair, jewelry, any other accessories that could disturb your sleep, as well as the routine you keep. Consider whether you need a change in pajamas, something on your feet or hands, or on your head. Also, whether you engage in any grooming regimen that could disturb your sleep, such as sleeping with lotion mitts or socks on, hair rollers, etc. Actually, I'm going to check in real quick. Dr. Mathis, do you feel the need to stop and comment after these? You want me to just go through them and stop at the end?
Yeah, just stop at the end and I'll add whatever I need to. Thank you for asking that.
Okay. So the next part is about your bed. Consider needed changes in the style or height of your bed, the mattress, bedding, pillows, padding, the materials things are made of, you know, do they have allergens, the coverings, or anything that is less than comfy and ideal for you to easily get in and out and find a relaxing position to quickly drift off to sleep. Also, don't use your bed as an office, a mailroom, or a snack tray. These things disturb sleep as well. The bedroom. Consider changes to your bedroom that will make it more inviting and not distracting. I'm not going to tell you to make it completely dark and silent, because not only do some people not prefer that, I'm one of them, I've never slept in a dark and silent room since I was about 7, but some people with severe sleep disorders may need some kind of light or sound to assist them in resetting their cycles. Just take into consideration the lighting, the sounds or music, the smells, like some essential oils in a diffuser or wax melts, something very low maintenance. I do not suggest candles because you have to babysit those things. And if they get tipped over, you have a problem. Humidity, the temperature, curtains and windows, electronic devices, the pathways and clutter between you and your nightstand or the bathroom, your clothing, your toiletries, medicine, and comfort items. Consider any possible issues if you sleep with a partner. Does one or both of you have a medical issue that is disturbing one another? Do you have different schedules? Does one of you snore? Does one toss and turn or hog the covers? Does one insist on music or the TV in such a way that you cannot get to or stay asleep? Be willing to have a forthright conversation about both partners' sleep habits. Also consider the presence or the constant in and out of pets or small children in the room. Consider where cell phones and landlines live, and even tablets and computers, unless you're using one for a sleep assistance app or program. Like, I have a playlist on YouTube that I use that has meditative songs and other things that are for sleeping, because I can't sleep in abject silence. But I have it on a little tablet, and it's down, so the light is very low and the volume is very low. If you do that, that's fine. I'm not going to talk you out of it. Some people can't. That's fine. Put the tablet out somewhere else. But you got to take a look at these things if you are having trouble with sleep, because it's not just as simple as, oh, take a pill. All right, your bedtime routine. consider if you're rushing yourself in the evening or leaving yourself appropriate amounts of time to prepare for bed. Be mindful of how late you eat and drink and how much also. Leave time to take all medications, complete evening grooming such as your teeth and hair, changing clothes and dealing with dirty clothes. Or are you overwhelmed with Mount Washmore spilling into your bedroom path because you never leave time for that either? That will get disruptive after a while. If you just jump into bed with 5 minutes to go and you throw your clothes in the corner, next thing you know, you can't even move in there. That's not conducive to good sleep. Do you like to wind down with some hot tea and a little bit of reading or calming music? Most people benefit from keeping and sticking to a regular bedtime routine, allowing for about 7 to 8 hours of good quality sleep most nights. If you can at least do that on most of a regular basis, that is ideal. Dietary changes. I am pretty sure at the end Dr. Mathis is going to have something to say about this one. There are multiple sleep disorders that can be tied to problems with our diets, from timing of meals to food allergens to undetected or undiagnosed issues such as acid reflux. That was a big one for me. I don't get heartburn. I had other problems, and it was keeping me awake, and I didn't know. To unnoticed or missed ingredients such as caffeine or excessive sugars that you didn't realize were in things. Consider making changes to the schedule, amounts, and types of food and drink that you intake as possible adjustments in pursuit of better sleep. Supplements and dietary supplements. There are several kinds of supplements that can help improve sleep. As with all supplements, we encourage you to do your own research and to hold out for highly bioavailable, means your body absorbs it better, and organically sourced ingredients, and to verify their safety and compatibility with your current meds and conditions with your personal physician, and also maybe your pharmacist. There are a lot of scams out there as well, so take your time doing your homework. Don't rush into this. And don't hesitate to message our Facebook page if you're having difficulty finding good information to take to your doctor. We can give you some advice, you know, what to look for. We discourage relying on simple sleeping pills, even if it's just over the counter, because they don't solve the actual issue, and they can cause further sleep cycle damage with long-term use.
You got that right.
Prescription medication. Yes. Prescription medications. This is something that probably should be considered only in cases where the person has exhaustively tried the previous mentioned remedies for quite some time and has had little or no relief. That has been me, but I tried for years, and I've only tried very minor prescription changes to get some relief. In fact, the person who did the final thing that worked on me was a recommendation by Dr. Mathis, somebody in Atlanta that I miss very much, by the way. So prescription sleeping pills are a pretty serious solution and definitely not one size fits most. There are also several medications that are primarily for other conditions, such as nausea or blood pressure issues, one of which I'm on, that have specific secondary uses in treating very specific kinds of sleep disorders, often those relating to anxiety or PTSD. Our listeners should just be aware that some medications have successfully helped some people and that they should pursue this with their doctor if milder remedies do not help. But don't make this be your immediate first go-to. Medical equipment. As I mentioned earlier, devices such as the CPAP or mouth guard are only helpful if the sleep disorder is specifically caused by obstructive sleep apnea. There are also a few newer devices available now, such as the Inspire implant, which sends signals to the body internally to disrupt apnea episodes. But again, these devices only address one subset of a long list of types of sleep problems. Most other kinds of sleep disorders won't benefit from them. So it's important to get a sleep study in the lab to figure out what the heck kind of disorder you have. Stressors. Consider whether you can eliminate or at least address or reduce some stressors in your life, which may be causing you to hold on to excessive anxiety and rumination, thus robbing you of sleep. Mental health. Last and certainly not least, sleep problems are definitely a mental health issue, and you should see your trusted mental health professional to determine whether or not you may be experiencing any issues in that regard which need addressing. Our ability to cope emotionally, to focus, be reasonable, react appropriately, and other mental health matters can all be eroded by poor sleep, and it can creep up over time before we even realize it. And now, Dr. Mathis, would you like to address our listeners?
Yeah, let me just throw a couple of things in. First of all, general rule of thumb is if you're going to bed and you can't get to sleep within 30 minutes, 45 minutes max, get up. Don't lie in the bed. Don't associate the bed with sleeplessness. The second thing is, if you take like regular sleeping pills, those things only work in the short run and the sedative hypnotics and they're highly addicting, and then when you stop taking them, you have this thing called rebound insomnia, which means your body goes, okay, so now you're not taking this stuff anymore, and you got us used to taking this crap. Now we're going to slap you, and you're going to have worse insomnia than you started. So I almost never suggest that that's a good thing for most folks to do. Also, in terms of the more supplemental holistic stuff, melatonin's good for certain folks. There's certain elements that work really well. Calcium, certain kinds of calcium will slow brain waves down. It'll help. Folic acid, that sort of thing. But again, you got to know your situation and talk to somebody who's a competent holistic practitioner. In terms of therapeutic-y things, you know, obviously if you have anxiety, depression, you want to address those. But you can also learn to do things like self-hypnosis, meditation, mindfulness, which will all help relax the body and put you in more of a sleep state of mind, so to speak.
Got it. Okie dokie. Actually, you know what? It's funny. Somewhere in my notes, I thought that I had a comment, and I've read everything, and I don't see the comment. But it was something important that I wanted to bring up. There was something that I read earlier about a certain behavior in REM sleep, and if you had this disorder, it was a predictor of Parkinson's. I don't know. Does this sound familiar to you?
It does, but I can't put my finger on it.
Okay. I may have to go look around later and see if it – oh, you know what? Oh, I think it maybe have to do in the hypersomnia thing. I didn't post it in here, but it was during the same thing where I said that hypersomnia, could sometimes be caused by having MS or Parkinson's. And during that article somewhere else, I didn't paste in, it had said sometimes the presence of certain kinds of hypersomnia were a predictor. So if you're having
a future Parkinson's.
Yeah, future Parkinson's. Like if you haven't been diagnosed and you have reason to think that this might be in your family history or other symptoms of it, have yourself tested for Parkinson's just to clear it off, you know, make sure you don't have it because it might be an early warning signal.
Yeah. The other thing I would say to the listeners is you can have multiple sleep disorders. It's not like, oh, I've got one, I can't have another. My dad had the restless leg thing, and he had sleep apnea.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So you can have multiple sleep disorders in the same person. So don't, and therefore he had sleep deprivation a lot of the time. And didn't he know it till he got much older. And, you know, I kept hint, nudge, nudge. You know, I think you might have. And, of course, he blew me off and then eventually went and got tested. And he goes, oh, gosh, you know, you were right. Let me think why that might be the case.
I'm so shocked.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, if you guys take away nothing else, we as a society, as a culture, we're very flip, and we almost romanticize not getting enough sleep. Like, I work so hard, and, you know, I do all of these things. Who has time for sleep because I'm so amazing because I do all these things? This is not something that should be romanticized. This is something that kills people. It's not cute.
Yep, kinda.
It doesn't make you a harder worker or a better person. It doesn't do anything but kill you.
Yeah.
So,
I sort of put this in the same category of folks that romanticize suicide. Sleep deprivation and suicide will both kill you. Not a good thing to be doing.
You know, actually, there was a statistic in something I read for tonight's notes that said there is a correlation, at least. They don't know if there's a causality, but there is a very heavy correlation between insomnia issues and suicide, suicidal ideation.
Oh, yeah, because what happens is people get so sick of being tired and sleepy, and then it colors their judgment, and then it leads to them to get, you know, helpless and hopeless and some of the depression things, and they go, screw it, I'm not living the rest of my life like this. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, when we say this, we're not full of hyperbole. We're actually trying to keep you guys from doing anything foolish because you're too tired to realize it's foolish.
Yeah.
All righty. So, anything else that you want to bring up before we close up?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. So, in summary, we hope now that our listeners better understand sleep deprivation, both as a symptom and a potential cause of mental health issues. And we hope our listeners have a fuller understanding of the critical role that appropriate long-term restful sleep has on mental health, wellness, and psychological functionality, and how to seek help if they feel that they may be having difficulties in this area. So it's past midnight, so we'll go ahead and wrap. On behalf of myself and Dr. Mathis and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, October 30th. Maybe we'll do something spoopy at 11 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com. We also want to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. Tomorrow, Thursday the 17th, Travel Itch Radio, Magical Mendocino, the coastal Northern California town that served as a stand-in for Crabapple Cove and Murder, She Wrote, is home to quaint shops, bistros, and places to stay high above the Pacific waters. Hear all about the best of the inns Thursday, October 17th at 8 p.m. when Little River Inn owner, innkeeper Callie Dim visits Travel Itch Radio. On Sunday the 20th, I'll be hosting the Walking Dead online viewing party, season 10, episode 3. The episode is called Ghosts. And Monday the 21st, Monday night in America, year 12, join Roger, the Admiral Noriega, as he brings you the latest happenings in the world, discussing current events, politics, television, entertainment, and lots of other stuff. Please look for us on the Rock and Roll Shrink Facebook page, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody, and rock on. Thank you.